afternoon. I am Hank Jones, and you are here on Hank Jones Polysports, part of Global Patriot Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, January the 12th, 2022. Mrs. Hank has pointed out to me that I am not allowed to say 2022 because that makes it sound like 2020, comma, T-O-O. Thus, 2022. I think that's kind of a cool way to do it, I guess. You know, it works for me. Lots of stuff going on. But first, the show. If you want to call in and listen, 319-527-6706. You can also come in via the chat portal. Go into blogtalkradio.com, look for the live button, find Global Patriot Radio down in the lower right-hand corner. If you want to email me, you can do that anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Find me at Facebook, Hank Jones Polysports, or find me on Twitter at, that's why I sort of do like the showrunners, put the link to the show in there, that kind of thing. I'm here, of course. My wife and little Aussie are here. Little Aussie just ate a little while ago. She's sort of calmed down because of it. But hey, again, like I said, the best way, call in 319-527-6706, like T. Bodie has done. T. Bodie is listening in the phone room. He's not in the chat room. He might be later. Lots of obituaries this week. You know, last week I only touched on Betty White because I thought, you know, you don't, she doesn't share with anyone. You don't share her in that regard. So since this year we have lost, January 1st, we lost former football player and coach Dan Reeves to complications from dementia at age 77. January 2nd, we lost Big Daddy Weave bassist Jay Weaver to COVID at age 42. Then we lost hip-hop producer Trax-A-Million to cancer at age 42. And former baseballer, including a stint with the Cubs, Larry Bittner, lost him to cancer at age 75. January 3rd, we lost TV producer Jay Wolpert at age 79, complications of Alzheimer's. And then Claude Tattinger. For us American types, but Tattinger, if that sounds familiar, yeah, he's the director of the Champagne House that bears his family name. Yeah, it does that because it was founded by his father. Claude Tattinger died at 94, no cause listed. Does there need to be at 94? We also lost four-time U.S. Olympic hammer thrower Judd Logan, also complications of COVID. He was only 62. And then former Denver Bronco and later mayor of North Glen, Ohio, Odell Berry, passed from heart disease at 82. January 4th, the loss of Jesse Daniels at age 58. Now, he was a former member of the group The Force MDs and a monster hit late in 1985 and through much of 1986. It was called Tender Love. Popular song, and then no cause was listed there. And then we also lost former Notre Dame and Green Bay Packer defensive end Ross Browner, again, to COVID at age 67. January 5th, we lost former college football coach Greg Robinson, complications of Alzheimer's at 70. And then Lawrence Brooks. Lawrence Brooks was our country's oldest man, and he was the oldest remaining living World War II vet. Lawrence Brooks passing away at age 112. On January 6th, in addition to it being our newest holiday, I've named that Insurrection Day. It's going to be my own holiday, Insurrection Day. We had some big Hollywood deaths. We lost actor Sidney Poitier at age 94, won an Oscar for Lilies of the Field, featured in several other good to great flicks, my personal favorite being A Patch of Blue, with Elizabeth Hartman. For those who think that name's familiar, yes, she played the wife of Buford Pusser in the original Walking Tall movie. She died back in the 80s. She committed suicide, jumped off a building in Pittsburgh. We also lost Peter Bogdanovich that day to Parkinson's disease at age 82. He directed several major hits, including The Last Picture Show, Paper Moon with Ryan O'Neal and what's the daughter's name? Tatum O'Neill. And then my personal favorite of his, the one with Cher and Sam Elliott and Eric Stoltz, Mask. That day we also lost a member of an iconic band. The band is called Parliament. That day, Calvin Simon, one of the singers in that band, died. So we'll play a little quick little tribute to him. Okay, let's admit it. George Clinton is what makes Parliament Funkadelic go, whether you knew him as Parliament or Funkadelic or as Parliament Funkadelic. I doubt anyone knows the other names of the other 14 members of that band. Yes, literally, there have been 15 members. I know, it's not Spinal Tap numbers. But anyway, Calvin Simon passing away and this popular song, Flashlight. January 7th was kind of dormant, but January 8th, was a biggie in terms of musical lions, if you will, lions of the music world. We lost Marilyn Bergman. She co-wrote several movie hits, The Way We Were from the movie of the same name, and You Don't Bring Me Flowers from, I believe, the jazz singer. Maybe not. She sang it with Neil Diamond. That's why I'm thinking it's a jazz singer, but I don't know. She had 3 Oscar wins, and she passed away of respiratory failure at age 93. That day, we also lost, at age 77, to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a gentleman by the name of Mike Lang. Now, most people are going to say, Mike Lang, I don't know. Anyone born after 1970 is not going to have a clue. Mike Lang brought us 2 monster concerts in 1969. First, he was the lead guy, at least on camera, for the movie. For the Woodstock Festival in August of 1969. Mike Lang was a guy who would be talking to the camera a lot, asking how much money they lost, how much they were going to lose. He was the main promoter. He and Artie Kornfeld, but Mike Lang was the front guy. He was also brought in very late in the process for the Altamont Free Concert in December of that year. I'll give a little free airtime to anyone who can call in and give me the reason folks might better know, or how folks might better know, the Altamont Free Concert. Now, for those of you that live in Central Florida, no, I'm not talking about the Altamont Mall. The two names are spelled differently. Altamont Mall has an E on the end. Altamont Free Concert does not. But if you can call in and tell me the Altamont Free Concert, if you're already listening, hit the 1. I'm going to give you a little bit of time. I'm not going to give you a lot of time because you can Google it. The Altamont Free Concert, he was brought in late in the process there. He was not the main guy, but I think he was brought in mainly an advisory role because he, of course, had his experience at Woodstock. Sunday, July 9th, very sad, lost Bob Saget at age 65, comedian, actor, he's on the Full House show. Stand-up comedy. He'd done recent stand-up comedy. Hawkeye Mike just asked me whatever happened to Wavy Gravy. I think he is still alive. I think he may have lost his wife recently, but Wavy Gravy is, I believe, still alive, or maybe he just recently passed as well. But Bob Saget was found in his hotel room in Orlando. They, at this point, don't know fully. No foul play or drugs suspected. Very sad, though. I mean, it's affected a lot. In fact, a couple people that Hawkeye Mike and T. Bodie and Indy Hawk and I knew from college that worked with him on Fuller House and knows him or knew him pretty well. And she was devastated. Less known, at least these days, that day was the loss of Dwayne Hickman. We lost him at age 87 to Parkinson's disease. Dwayne Hickman was best known for his portrayal as the title character in the show The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis. This one shocked me. He was also the younger brother of Daryl Hickman. For those that don't know, Hawkeye Mike will know who Daryl Hickman is because he knows everybody in movies. But Daryl Hickman, if you ever saw the movie Sharky's Machine, 1981 Burt Reynolds film, he played the character of Smiley, who was the insider in the department, the police department guy that was, you know, on the hook with the mob. so to speak. And yeah, so Daryl Hickman is still alive. Dwayne Hickman, though, sadly passing away last Sunday at the age of 87. Believe it or not, nothing else this week, really. So, I mean, sort of, you know, once you lost Bob Saget, I think everybody knew to hold off. Okay. I have two nominees, but this is the very dumbest, stupidest, most idiotic, time-wasting article ever. It appeared on Yahoo. We're going to read snippets from it. The title is, "On the Anniversary of January 6th Capitol Riot, A Reminder That Watching Footage May Be Traumatizing." Yeah, I know. It says, here, just listen to this. "First came the live images of the angry mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, of people shoving barricades, overwhelming police, and smashing windows. And then, in the days that followed, came more and more footage, increasingly violent, of angry, armed rioters bearing symbols of white supremacy, brutalizing police officers, and calling for the killing of various officials." Really? We saw almost none of that. We did see people shoving barricades, but we also saw police officers moving barricades and opening the doors, not to mention a police officer shooting one of those inside the Capitol. Bearing symbols of white supremacy? You know, I got to say this. You know, we always hear we hear these stories that come out later of you know, past racist acts or current racist statements by people in Big Left. That's how they know what the symbols of white supremacy are. You ever notice nobody but people in Big Left know the symbols for white supremacy? Yeah, there might be a reason for that. And then now here it goes on. Now, a year later, because this was originally written last year, video clips continue to come at such a relentless pace, that they seem to be a constant loop. Not only on TV and social media feeds, but in people's minds, triggering anxiety, insomnia, and all sorts of traumatic stress. Good God. Here's one psychologist, a senior director of healthcare innovation for the American Psychological Association, told Yahoo Life in the original article in January 2021, "These images were incredibly violent. And so repeated exposure to them, even if you're not an immediate threat, but can simply empathize with the others who were, causes you to maintain a state of hypervigilance, that high level of arousal you maintain by exposing yourself to it." Good God. Good God. Bad enough they put that on the internet last year, but to rehash it this year? Well, here's the second place finisher to that article above, the stupidest article. Here's the second place finisher. This one titled simply enough, "The Unanswered Questions About the January 6th Capitol Riot." "The House Select Committee on the January 6th insurrection has yet to release much information about its findings, plans to do sometime this year. The committee has interviewed around 300 people, has compiled 30,000 records, and is closing in on acquiring a vast swath of White House documents from the National Archives. The document issue has been moving through the courts, and federal judges have rejected former President Donald Trump's claims of executive privilege. Trump has asked the Supreme Court to block records from being released. Here are the major questions that have emerged as central to the committee's work. Was there planning? January 6th insurrection was, on its face, a pretty simple case. Starting in the middle of 2020, Trump claimed without evidence that the election would be rigged against him. He continued to do this after he lost the election by more than 7 million votes, and he summoned his supporters to Washington on the day Congress was set to certify the election results. He did no such thing." Good God. And it says, "Before he took the stage that day, others incited the crowd. Representative Mo Brooks of Alabama said, 'Today is the day American patriots start taking down names and kicking ass.' He told the crowd that their ancestors had sacrificed many things in the past." You know what? That's actually true. Ancestors sacrificed many things in the past to preserve the country, including sometimes their lives, as Mo Brooks said. Good Lord. Good Lord. I mean, when does that end? When do these people finally acknowledge that it was some people that broke in the heat of a protest? Seriously, when does it end? Well, here's something from the American Times, the Epoch Times. This kind of tells us how an American gulag works. Yeah, U.S. Marshals identify deficiencies in the D.C. jail holding January 6th defendants. Yep. Including Robert Giesewein, whose attorneys are filing suits in his case, but marshals conducted a surprise inspection of the jail in the fall of 2021. Said there were officers found evidence of systemic failures, including evidence water was shut off to inmates as punishment. And they said conditions overall were observed to be largely appropriate and consistent with federal prisoner detention standards. I'm going to have to defer to somebody that might know. Hawkeye Mike might know. I'm pretty sure withholding water as punishment is not a standard in any United States prison. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that. Yeah. Found additional deficiencies. They're saying information is being verified. And, of course, the D.C. Department of Corrections and U.S. Marshals did not respond to more requests for comment. Yeah. One U.S. District Judge, Royce Lamberth, last October, held jail officials in contempt for violating January 6th defendants' civil rights by impeding access to medical care. Again, I am pretty darn sure that's not a quote-unquote standard. I mean, Mike pointed out that shaman guy got 5 years. I'm not even sure what for. Ray Epps, they're talking about, the former Marine, allegedly an FBI plant. He's now, he claims he wasn't. FBI won't confirm. Yeah, ironic, isn't it, that the FBI doesn't want to confirm and will cite various levels of security, but meanwhile they go after President Trump's stuff and don't allow him to exercise executive privilege? Yeah, in that case of the judge, Royce Lamberth, he actually ordered the defendant to be released. Around the same time, in October, multiple defendants were removed from their cells on stretchers after guards reportedly began spraying a chemical substance and didn't stop for 15 minutes. Yeah, defendants have complained about substandard care, including alleged assaults by guards, in addition to lack of medical care. Yeah. I mean, we're literally treating our own citizens worse than we're treating illegals who have entered our country illegally, who we are flying around to various parts of the country, not requiring them to be vaccinated. I mean, this is just literally American gulag right here in the United States. You know, I'm going to get my friend Rich back on because he would be able to tell us more. He you know, he went through all and did all his film editing and stuff. If you remember, he was on last year on January 6th and talked about this. It's repulsive what's happening. Okay, this next item, I'll make this quick because I usually don't like to spend much time talking about Nick Saban. And with Georgia's convincing win over Saban's Alabama Crimson Tide Monday night, it's kind of hard not to pile up on the guy, but I'm trying not to. Anyway, he stopped two players of his Monday night at the post-game press conference. They were – media released them, said you're free to go. And he reached out and sat them both down. He went on this ass-kissing spiel that would frankly make Eddie Haskell envious. He just went on and on about, he said these players were a big part of why we got to this game in the first place, why we won the SEC championship, in spite of the fact that each of them took responsibility. I bring this up because it's eerily similar in circumstance to his post-game press conference after the 2005 Capital One Bowl. For non-Hawkeye and non-LSU fans, that's the game the Hawkeyes won on a 56-yard bomb desperation pass on the last play of the game. At that post-game press conference, Nick Saban threw a defensive back under the bus for blowing coverage on the play. What made it stand out, well, one, that he threw a player under the bus, but it was his last game at LSU. Remember, he'd taken off for – he'd already signed to coach the Dolphins. It was – they'd come back. LSU had come back with 40 seconds left after being down most of the game. And frankly, it was noted by media from both schools as somewhat low – considering Saban was on his way to coach the Dolphins. So why do I bring it up? Okay, well, despite its similarity to the Cap 1 post-game press conference in that it was Nick Saban, it was also a 180. Back then, coaches pretty much held the cards. Not to mention, as I said, Saban was bolting for the NFL. But players had no transfer portal. They couldn't be contacted by other schools, even if they were public in voicing displeasure. They couldn't transfer without sitting out a year. Well, now, well, in addition to the fact that players can always enter the draft after their third season. Now, in the case of these two players, that's not an option. They've only each been 2 years. They're a year away, but they can still leave next year. But these two players now have virtual free agency. Remember, several years ago, the 2017 season, Saban replaced star quarterback Jalen Hurts with his next star quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, at halftime of the ball playoff championship game, which, by the way, also happened to be the game in which they faced Georgia previously. But they won that one in OT. Well, Jalen Hurts stayed an additional year, and then he actually saved the Tide in the SEC championship game, and then he only saw mop-up duty in their semifinal game against Clemson. Clemson absolutely bitch-slapped him. He was, by that time, a graduate. He became a grad transfer. He went on to a next year to a fine year at Oklahoma. He parlayed that into an NFL career. Tua Tagovailoa stayed an additional year at Bama, got injured late in the season. They didn't make the CFP. He left a year early for the NFL. In other words, Jalen Hurts being gone was probably a major issue for the Tide that next year, or that 2 years later, two seasons later. Now, despite Mac Jones having a monster year in 2020, he was no highlight player in 2019. So again, the point, well, I know you're all clamoring for me to have a point. At this point is this. The Tide, pardon the expression, or so to speak, has swung decidedly in favor of the player. All his money, all his accolades, all his kudos as the GOAT of college football coaches goes for naught for Nick Saban. We assume Bama players always toe the line, walk in lockstep, would never think of leaving. Well, we've seen players leave other schools and head to Bama. So Nick Saban knows it can damn well happen in the reverse. So while he appeared to be acting as a stand-up guy, what we also saw was a knuckling of the forehead, with Nick Saban acknowledging that at the current moment anyway, players hold damn near all the cards. Now, whether that or not that's good, that's up for debate. But understand, there is no debate about the current state of affairs. Players hold most, if not all, the cards. Now, while I am, of course, always going to discuss COVID on this show, as long as we have people talking about it, here's a tidbit from Epic Health, which is part of the Epic Times group of publications. Aram Han, who is a professor in the engineering and computer department at Texas A&M, along with his team of researchers, they have demonstrated that heat treatment of less than a second completely inactivates the virus so that it cannot infect another human host. Now, what's significant there, previous studies have shown that it took anywhere from 1 to 20 minutes to neutralize the virus. That's been, it has been seen as impractical. It's costly. It's time-consuming. The immediate heat and beat, though, is seen as a way to quickly mitigate the spread, especially as it relates to airborne transmission. My only question is this. Will the climate Nazis go along with this? I mean, artificial heat, high temperatures? Climate crowd's not going to like that. Not to mention, what good is neutralizing a virus that has served so well in politicizing and weaponizing it for the progressive slash socialist slash communist ideologies and causes? Just so you know, Dopey Joe is now, I've added to it, it's Dopey Joe, and I've added flip-flop and manipulated like a marionette. So it's Dopey Joe, flip-flop, and manipulated like a marionette Joe. Yeah, his latest flip-flop, the Senate rules. The Senate rules. His decision, he's calling for the Senate to pass voting rights protections and get rid of the Senate rules of filibuster. Forget the fact that he lived in the Senate. He spent decades living by it and abiding by those rules. He also defended it on numerous occasions, both when Democrats used the filibuster as well as Republicans. Yeah, but those rules, he says, were about compromise and moderation. Really? He said, the threat to our democracy is so great that we must find a way to pass these voting rights bills. He said that in Atlanta. By the way, Stacey Abrams was not there. And he says, debate them, vote, let the majority prevail. And if that bare minimum is blocked, we have no option but to change the Senate rules, including get rid of the filibuster. And he later said, I'm tired of being quiet. God. So inflation jumped 7% this past year, the fastest in 39 years. Like I said, rate was 7%. Personally, I think they are manipulating that. Now, they say last time it was that fast was in 1981, 82. Personally, I think they're manipulating it. Why? Given that gas prices alone jumped over 50%, there is absolutely no way that we saw enough downturn anywhere else in the economy that account for the difference. Chicken wings. Talked about those two last week. Chicken wings, where some places it says market price. Yeah, other grocery items as well. Yeah, sorry, folks. The Department of Commerce and the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the other alphabet agencies that put this stuff out, they're lying. They're flat out lying. Inflation only 7%. You know, talking about the capital stuff, Ray Epps is a former Marine, as I mentioned. He's sort of been in the news because he's talked about for that he had actually pushed for people to go into the Capitol before President Trump was even speaking. They tried to make it sound like, yeah, Ray Epps, was, you know, now they're saying he's not FBI plant. He's saying it. He testified. I mean, do you believe him? Mafia guys have testified in front of Congress and said, no, I didn't. So there's no reason, you know, that Ray Epps wouldn't lie. Really, what's the penalty at this point anymore? It's become, you know, it's become meaningless to tell the truth in front of Congress. But anyway, this guy's coming under some notoriety. The press is doing everything they can to keep this guy behind, I don't want to say behind, keep this guy out of the limelight as much as possible. But at some point, they're going to have to ask the hard questions. Think about this, people. If you're there and you get caught, you get accused. First of all, this guy has not been accused. This guy has not been arrested for anything. And yet he's figured prominently in several videos. But somehow he's escaped any arrest. But if you did get arrested, and you're looking to get out, and you're only half principled. There's a lot of people in any mob. You know, I don't care if there were a lot of Trump supporters there. You know, a lot of the people weren't. And I've said it before on this show early on. The easiest way to determine the IQ of a mob, the aggregate IQ of a mob, or the average IQ of a mob, you take the lowest IQ and divide it by the number of people present. In other words, a mob of 1,000 people's pretty low IQ. Mob of 10,000, even lower. But so if you're half principled and not the highest IQ, and you're seeing, oh God, I'm in jail and they're not, I'm not smart enough to figure out how to get out of here, and I can't afford a lawyer. And by the way, if they do provide one, he's working for the same people that are working to convict you, especially at the federal level. I mean, and I couldn't speak to it concretely. Hawkeye Mike might be able to, but on local levels, public defenders are often very good attorneys and are, you know, there's a separate public defender's office. I've heard at the federal level that they work together all the time, the defenders and prosecutors. So yeah, it's this ramp stuff is gonna. But so anyway, if you're half principled and half smart, and you're worried, and you're suddenly losing your job and your car and maybe your house, you might turn on President Trump. You might think, well, you know, didn't get off my whatever. He's not doing anything for me. Never mind the fact of what he did for the country. He did do for you, but. So, yeah, I can see that there are going to be people that say, oh, yeah. I mean, like, remember I said lying to Congress. If you've seen the movie The Godfather Part II, they had a guy dead to rights, Frankie Pantangeli, and then they walked a guy in who was his brother, the Senate. And he's like, well, I made stuff up. They said Michael Corleone did this, and Michael Corleone did that. And I said, sure. So, yeah, just because – Ray Epps says he was not an FBI plant. Let's consider the trust level in the FBI these days. Raise your hand if you trust the hell out of the FBI. Yeah, exactly. I don't see a hand up. And you won't see a hand up because they're not to be trusted anymore. I'm not saying there aren't good people that work in the FBI. I'm saying as an institution, the FBI is at an all-time low in terms of integrity, trustworthiness, even effectiveness. Okay, back on something a little more lighthearted. Well, I thought that the first two items that I talked about won the idiot net, but Yahoo outdid itself today with an article, the title, Trans Swimmers Faced Off in an Ivy League Meet and the Results Upended Transphobic Arguments Against Their Participation. So here's what happened. That Will Thomas, or Leah Thomas, whatever, Willia Thomas, won several events in an Ivy League meet at Penn. Won big, like national record type stuff. And then swam the 100 freestyle. Now understand, Will Thomas did not swim the 100 freestyle. Only on occasion. Will Thomas was more of a middle and long distance swimmer. So Will Thomas faced off against a swimmer who identifies as a man, but has not yet undertaken a hormonal transition. Swimmer's name is Isaac Hennig. I-S-Z-A-C. So Isaac Hennig, who is a woman, Leah Thomas. Now, here's what it says. In other words, the notion that trans women will indubitably dominate any woman's sporting event they compete in doesn't hold up. Actually, it does. Now, to say haven't gone through the hormonal transformation, NCAA requires trans women to complete at least one calendar year of testosterone suppression treatment. Here's the problem. For going in the reverse, they can't go through it. Not quite the fact. Now, Hennig has gotten top surgery, but allegedly put off any hormone treatment. And it says the delay has decidedly put him, quote, in a weird position. Now, look, let's come at this a different way, folks. You know, as I talked about, Steve Day said on this show 2.5 years ago, it's a mental disease. Think of it in these terms. Okay, I don't care if you're a swimmer, a piano player, whatever. If you've made the decision to go through surgery and become a woman or a man, if you're a woman or a man and decided to become the opposite, are you really all that concerned about sports anymore? If you are, then yeah, that's where I think Steve Dace is right. It's a mental disease. You just have to wonder. I mean, the NCAA just says a calendar year. They don't even talk about levels. Now, at least at the Olympics, they talk about levels of hormones. NCAA does not. You just have to attest that you have undergone suppression therapy or not. So, yeah, Yahoo dedicated an article to that. It was literally front page for a while on their webpage. I mean, that's what's making our news. Yeah, kind of frightening. Okay, I guess we've always known that New York Times columnist / editorialist / ideologue Thomas Friedman is a tad, unhinged. Yeah, and he went clear over the top yesterday. By the way, I don't know this by reading his column because I never read his column. But when somebody points up one of his insane offerings, that's when I get on and look and laugh. And this one's damn near awesome in terms of insanity. So yesterday, Friedman exhibited the latest DNC / big left hilarities, that of blaming all the gaffes from La Dopi Nostra and the poor approval ratings on installed Vice President Kamala Harris. Well, how bad is it? Well, Friedman suggested that dopey flip-flop and manipulated like a marionette Joe drop cackling Kamala on the 2024 ticket. Now, in and of itself, it's pretty hilarious, given that the installed president probably won't make the 2024 ticket. But if he does, old Tom Friedman is suggesting that dopey flip-flop and manipulated like a marionette Joe put a GOP, put a Republican on his ticket, specifically Republican Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming. Now, I mean, she'll probably be available, given that she stands a good chance of losing in this year's midterm election. But even if she doesn't, old Tom thinks dopey, flip-flop, and manipulated like a marionette Joe should put her on the ticket as vice president. Now, Friedman used the ruse of citing Israel's 2021 election, which he said featured candidates across the spectrum coming into power. And power is the operative word here, by the way. Friedman reached out to political analyst Stephen Levitsky, who's about as Republican or unbiased or to the center as Bernie Sanders. The only difference is that Levitsky pretends that he believes in democracy and democratic institutions, saying it's the people in those systems that corrupt him. Bernie's at least honest. He doesn't believe in any form of government that allows people to find and determine their own destiny. Anywho, Levitsky is so to the center that one of his statements to Friedman was this, quote, democracy cannot afford for this Republican Party to win again, for failing to commit to democratic rules if a Biden-Cheney ticket is, quote, such a crazy idea. Friedman did not use a capital D for democratic. My guess is that Levitsky didn't when he answered Friedman's questions, or question or questions. I'm thinking that that was either an oversight, or both Friedman and Levitsky being authoritarian types. They're authoritarian enough to think that their readers and their students, by the way, Levitsky's a professor at Harvard with degrees from Stanford and Cal Berkeley, that they figure their readers and their students will get the intentional oversight. Two things here. First, neither Thomas Friedman nor Stephen Levitsky, nor for that matter Levitsky's doctoral advisor, David Collier, believe in actual democracy, let alone a republic or constitutional republic. Second, this isn't an effort to reach across the aisle or a way to mitigate one ideology with a counterbalance of a different ideology. No. Folks, this is really about one thing. It's about utilizing the never-Trumpers in the Republican Party to quash any potential for the GOP to take back the House or the Senate or the White House. Now, Friedman obviously believes that Liz Cheney, and by extension her father, Dick Cheney, could be used to blunt or thwart any GOP momentum. And guess what? He's not entirely wrong. But he's fooling himself if he believes the American people won't see through it, or that Dick Cheney on the campaign trail in support of dopey flip-flop and manipulated like a marionette Joe would not turn off a vast number of those in Big Left, as well as many of their voters. True, it wouldn't mean a thing to their dead voters. But the more virulent and hard lefties that are still alive wouldn't go for it. How do I know this? Go to Friedman's Twitter. There's hundreds of responses to this column. I found none. I maybe there was one or two that didn't totally. But, I mean, for the most part, almost every response was, "Are you kidding?" Others saying, literally, I think I've died and I haven't gone to heaven was one. I mean, yeah, lefties not supporting Tom Friedman on Twitter kind of tells you that it was a stupid idea. Now, Holger, caller to this show and a frequent caller to Vito's show, he sent out a thing. Maybe it might have been I remember if it was email or if he tweeted something out. Many think that Hillary Rotten Clinton is standing idly by, ready to pounce. And as ratings for Dopey Joe get lower, she's there to go in for the kill. Now, some of that is the fact, I would guess she's betting that Dopey Joe won't make it to 2024, or that she would jump in for Kamala Harris. That simply won't, I don't know. Speaking of Twitter, Big Left has taken to the Twitterverse to let us all know that filibusters and other Senate rules shouldn't stand in the way of passing voting legislation. I mentioned earlier, that would effectively give DNC and Big Left complete control of our elections. Okay, I'll read them, you weep, and then I'll explain. So Kamala Harris said, "Let us be clear. The Constitution gives Congress the power to pass legislation. And nowhere does the Constitution give a minority the right to unilaterally block legislation. The Senate must act." Dopey flip-flop and marionated like a marionette Joe said, "When it comes to protecting majority rule in America, majority should rule in the United States Senate. To protect our democracy, I support changing the Senate rules to prevent a minority of senators from blocking action on voting rights." Beatoff O'Rourke said, "It's the filibuster or democracy." Dan Rather Not said, "In my book, there's nothing moderate about blocking voting rights." One at a time. Okay, like I said, Kamala Harris, here she said, "Let us be clear. The Constitution gives Congress the power to pass legislation. And nowhere does the Constitution give a minority the right to unilaterally block legislation. The Senate must act." The Senate is acting. Don't you understand, Kamala Harris? What don't you understand? The Senate is acting according to its own rules. As far as Dopey Joe, as I said, here's what he said. "When it comes to protecting the majority rule in America, the majority should rule in the United States Senate. To protect our democracy, I support changing the Senate rules to prevent a minority of senators from blocking action on voting rights." You supported the rules when it suited you. Now, you just perfectly encapsulated the flip-flop portion of your new name that I gave you, but you supported it all along. And why on voting rights? What's different? Well, are voting rights any more or less substantial than other rights? I'll tell you, this is about taking control of the electoral process. It's not about voting rights. Beatoff O'Rourke, he said, "It's the filibuster or democracy." Oh, one answer, good Lord. That's all I got on that. Good Lord. It's the filibuster or democracy? Really? That's the best he can come up with. Actually, yeah, it's the best he can come up with. Dan Rather Not, he said, in my book, there's nothing moderate about blocking voter rights. Well, Dan, your book, your quote-unquote book, like your journalistic reporting, is filled with partisan lies. No book of yours would even have enough integrity to use as toilet paper. In my book. Oh, God, it's, yeah. Can't accuse him of it never being about him. Hey, count on IKEA to get boycotted. Don't be surprised if you start seeing the now prevalent staff shortage signs at their UK locations. Why? Because the Swedish furniture and home goods giant has announced that they will be cutting pay for any unvaccinated who use sick pay, have to self-isolate, or come into contact with anyone who is COVID positive. Here's more of the story. If I scream in the middle of this, please forgive me, but please understand why. Furniture retailer IKEA has announced that it intends to cut sick pay for any staff who remain unvaccinated and need to self-isolate if they test positive or come into contact with someone who tests positive for COVID. This is in their UK. The Daily Mail reports that the Swedish company, which employs some 10,000 people in the UK alone, intends to slash sick pay to the legal minimum of just £93.35 per week for anyone who is unvaccinated. That's roughly a third. It's roughly a third of the unemployment extension. Well, no, because that was a month, I guess. But yeah, £93.35. Figure 1.8, I think. Calculator out. We all got phones. Phones. So we got calculators on our phones. 93.35. I think it's $1.80, something like that. Yeah. So they're going to cut their sick pay to $168 a week for anyone who is unvaccinated. That would mean a cut of more than three quarters of the company's usual wages for their workers. So let's do it that way. 93.35 divided by 0.25 is, okay, so their average worker times 1.8. So their average worker makes about $670, supposedly. Unvaccinated, here's a quote, an IKEA spokesperson. Unvaccinated coworkers without mitigating circumstances who have been identified as close contacts of a positive case will be paid statutory stick. We appreciate that this is an emotive topic and all circumstances will be considered on a case-by-case basis. Therefore, anyone in doubt or concerned about their situation is encouraged to speak to their manager. Gee, I don't see any. Here I'm saying expect the boycotts and expect the staff shortage signs. Yeah, expect the lawsuits. Case-by-case basis. Company announced that the policy will only apply to unvaccinated workers with high levels of absence. Gee, no discrimination there. Guess what? The company claims that the move is prompted by recent staff shortages owing to many having to isolate. Said, following the vaccine rollout and changes in the government's isolation requirements, our approach to COVID-related absences evolved from September 20th, 2021, an approach developed with our social partners and National Coworker Committee. Yeah, that'll go over well. Like I said, expect the boycotts, expect the staff shortage signs, as well as the reduced hours. Yeah, you're not going to see an IKEA that's open normal hours, probably. I'm guessing it's probably quasi-legal there, given the language of the article. But my God, if a U.S. company did this. Now, yes, the unvaccinated are currently public enemy number one. But cutting to minimum wage or minimum sick pay, the union folks and the mandatory vax crowd may be headed for a serious showdown, both around the world and right here in good old USA. I mean, I cannot believe that they're even going to try this. Really can't. I mean, we knew it was coming. I mean, we knew that, you know, it's like, I mean, this might be the mark of the beast. You know, they talk about the mark of the beast will be required to transact any business. This might, the vax might be the mark of the beast. Very possible. You know, I hadn't really thought about it in that term, but yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's a matter of if you are not vaccinated, then you are not a person. And when it gets to that, folks, good God, you know, this is happening in Great Britain, UK. Well, guess what else has recently happened in the UK? Anybody? Anybody? Bueller? Yeah. Boris Johnson. Prime Minister Boris Johnson. He had to apologize a bit. Why? He apologizes for the party at 10 Downing Street during their lockdown. Boris Johnson is apologizing for a party at 10 Downing Street during the UK lockdown. He had a drinks party. He actually held a drinks party in the Downing Street garden when strict lockdown measures were in place. And this was during 2020. Of course, we're only hearing about it now. But it was a – he regretted joining the party, he said, which was billed as a bring-your-own-booze party. He explained that he thought the gathering was a work event. He says, I know the rage they feel with me, with the government I lead, Mr. Johnson said. With hindsight, I should have sent everyone back inside. Here's what's happening in our government, whether it's our government, UK, it doesn't really matter. Any government that still pretends to be about freedom. I'm not talking places like Russia or China or Red China. They're living by it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. And that in and of itself, is, while it's funny, shouldn't really apply to our government. Forgiveness really shouldn't even be an issue here. I mean, I can see this because I saw it. When COVID first started, we had neighbors that were college students and they were partying it up. So about a month into it, saw a cop car in front of their house, and I heard the knocks, and then the female cop, walked over to their pool area. It was a separate fenced pool area. Said, Winter, get out here, you know. She said, this is the police, and we've received complaints. She was there because there were gatherings. Now, I know a lot of people were like, oh, my God, you know. But you know what? They're college students. They're going to do that. But, I mean, really knocking on doors? Now, this was early on, like I said, in the first couple months. But guess what? That really doesn't matter. It wasn't during a party. It's you knocking on their house during the off hours. But that's what we're coming to. We're told we can't go to church. We're told we shouldn't have gatherings at Thanksgiving. And how much of this have we seen? I mean, we see AOC, who is from New York, where they currently have all sorts of restrictions, showing up in Florida, unmasked. She got COVID, so there's that. But, I mean, how long is it going to go on? How long are we going to have to keep seeing this? Literally, I mean, people have said it. Hawkeye Mike said it best in our text recently. He said, real simple, we should never have closed the economy. We should have just protected seniors and those that are vulnerable. I'm not even sure the 2 weeks to flatten the curve was a wise idea per se. Because guess what? People were getting it then. I mean, it's just, it's beyond. But yeah, so IKEA is going to do this in the UK. Prime Minister is apologizing for a party he threw that he shouldn't have thrown. Or I shouldn't say shouldn't have thrown, that he told other people they shouldn't throw. But he threw them. It is pretty much disgusting. It is pretty much repulsive. It is, you know, as I always say, if we did not, if there were no such thing as double standards, Big Left would have no standards at all. So, yeah. You know, WHO, I'm getting these text messages. WHO is joining the Euro to back off on vaccine boosters. And this is sad news from Iowa City. A friend says that a place in Iowa City called The Mill is being torn down. Indy Hawk says he never heard of it. I can't believe that. It's on Burlington Street in Iowa City. They had good spaghetti, cheap spaghetti. They had various entertainers. Tony Brown, Midwest reggae guy, was big there. Greg Brown was probably the most famous for the Midwest folk singer types. Great place, though, being torn down. But, yeah, Hawkeye Mike said it right best. It should have. Florida and Texas did that. They came quickly out of their restrictions and lockdowns. Guess what? We're going to see. And now, you know, like I said, I read obituaries today. How many of them were, you know, COVID-related? But again, what's coming out in the news? All these, you know, we've seen the military stuff, the military emails, and the other emails that, you know, that Fauci definitely used this as a political weapon, and not just Fauci, others, all of Big Left. We're seeing stuff about, you know, vaccine effectiveness or non-effectiveness. And we're seeing all this stuff. You know what? Had we pushed through, we would have gotten through it a lot faster. Every time you lock people away, it just delays the inevitable. Now, maybe with the research from Texas A&M, maybe we're going to see an end of it sooner or later, rather than later. This crap of government types punishing and or demonizing us, and then willfully ignoring their own edicts. It's got to stop. We've got to stop it. It's got to be us that stops it. Okay, I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to come back and talk college football, the end of the college football season. For anyone that wants to join in from the crew, please do. You're not required to. It's not required. But if you want to join in, hit the one on your phone if you want to talk. In the meantime, in honor of Woodstock and Mike Lang, I don't have his Star Spangled Banner version, but doesn't mean I can't play a little Hendrix in honor of Woodstock. Be back in about 3 minutes.
I heard some you got your family living in cages, tall and cold. Some just stay there and dust away past the age of old. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. I just wanna know about the rooms behind your mind. Do I see a vacuum there? Just a remains for vibration. X is long ago. Things like love the world and let your fancy flow. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. Let me talk to you. I have lived here before. The days are by. And of course this is why I'm so concerned. And I come back to find the stars displayed and the smell of a world that is burned. A smell of the world that is burned. Yeah, well, maybe maybe it's just a
Bye. I can dig it, baby. I just wanna see. So where do I put your tattoo? Just like to have a ringside seat. I wanna know about the new Mother Earth. I wanna hear and see everything. I wanna hear and see everything. I wanna hear and see everything.
The still popular, inimitable, uber-talented, innovational, and genius Jimi Hendrix with Up From the Skies. He didn't play that at Woodstock. But what people forget, too, I mean, he did do, like, Purple Haze, but when he was at Woodstock, he wasn't playing with Mitch Mitchell and Noel Redding. Playing with Buddy Cox. I was going to say Buddy Miles. But it was Band of Gypsies. He actually said that. This is a Band of Gypsies. So he played there with Band of Gypsies, not The Experience. So that's why when people say he didn't do all his notable stuff. Well, no, of course he didn't. Different time for him. So college football's over until late August, early September. I think like they'll do that week zero in late August that they do. Let's talk about the championship game first. Don't know. The score was Georgia 33, Alabama 18. In our group chat, we talked about the over-under, and my point then, and it remained, was that as long as it remained under, Georgia was going to win. Bear out. I mean, it bore out. I mean, the under-over was 52 or 52.5, and point total was 51. What's more shocking, though, the halftime score was 9-6 in favor of Alabama. That was also the score at the end of the third quarter, 9-6. I mean, if you got on Twitter at that time, you saw a lot of stuff like, this is like watching the Hawkeyes. You know, people were talking about that. Other people said, hey, see, this proves Iowa can win a national championship. Now, I kind of think the game turned on Georgia blocking that Bama field goal near the end of the third quarter. The Georgia offense definitely got in gear. Stetson Bennett, their quarterback, is sort of a folk hero now. Commentators included, were calling for them to maybe bring back. Oh God, I always forget their backup quarterback. It's not Jake Fromm, but that backup quarterback that they had, and people were calling for him somewhere. Well, turned out that Stetson Bennett did just fine. He had that fumble, led to a Bama touchdown and a brief lead for Bama, and then they came back. Guy was great. Got to hand it to him. I'm happy for him. More people are in the transfer portal. Penn State, junior running back Noah Kane. He was the number 4 running back and number 69 overall player ranked recruit in the 2019 class. He's leaving, or is in the portal. USC freshman quarterback Jackson Dart is in the portal. Texas Christian, 2-time All-Big 12 defensive end, O'Shawn Mathis, is in the portal. Yesterday, news popped that Georgia has 2 players, both reserves, entering the transfer portal, while Bama has 7. 7 people entering the transfer portal, including, get this, the great-grandson of legendary head coach Bear Bryant. Seriously, the great-grandson of Bear Bryant. I mean, that would be like Newt Rockne's great-grandson leaving Notre Dame. Or for Hawkeye fans, it would be like a Hilgenberg being in Iowa and entering the portal. Speaking of which, the Hawkeyes have had a couple players enter the portal. Some have caught on elsewhere. But have had 2 big wins with some players opting to stay. We've had some that left for the pros as well. The cornerback, Big Ten defensive back of the year, Riley Moss, announced last week that he is staying. And then this week, linebacker Jack Campbell, announced that he is staying. He's the nation's leading tackler. He said it was an easy choice. That's what he said. He was the FBS leader in tackles. 143 tackles, 2 interceptions, a forced fumble, 6 pass breakups, 6 quarterback hurries. Not to mention a fumble recovery, scoop and score against Iowa State. Yeah. Guess what? Mel Kiper had him as the number 9 draft eligible inside linebacker prospect for 2022. He said, I've made the easy choice of coming back and continuing to be a Hawkeye. The University of Iowa has given me so many blessings. This state and the people in it are the best in America, hands down. I'm excited to get back to work. Well, that's, you know, he had 14 tackles in the Citrus Bowl, by the way. But that's good news for the Hawkeye fans. Jack Campbell staying now. The other one, I'm not even going to get into it. Oh, here's news. I haven't seen it yet. But Indy Hawk points out Sam Laporta is staying. Tight end Sam Laporta. The one, I'm not going to say the name, but if he stays, it's gold. Hawkeye Mike's got his hand up, so I'm going to bring him in. Mike, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Hank?
Oh, pretty good. Getting better news all the time with Campbell staying.
Yeah, I just heard about Laporta. I didn't know about that. One guy I was kind of wondering about. I'm kind of surprised about Campbell. I kind of thought he might go. And Moss too.
Moss, I could see why, because he had some injury stuff. He probably got a lower grade because of it. But Campbell, I don't know how. I mean, that's true dedication for him to stay.
Yeah, I think so. You know, there's a rumor that Linderbaum wants to stay.
I have heard that
he should go for his own good, but yeah.
Yeah, especially after, remember, he came off the field in the Citrus Bowl. So I can't imagine that, you know, that the injuries doesn't play into his decision. I think he would be very, very – I mean, he'd have to be very dedicated to stay. I just don't see how he does. I just don't. So what did you think of the game Monday night?
I think I picked Georgia, you know, when we were doing that. So I'm not surprised they won. I did kind of think that Alabama, just being who they are, was going to find a way to do something and pull it off. But, to me, it was something of an anticlimax, I guess. These SEC matchups and the national championship kind of caused me to glaze over a little. I did want to see Georgia, though, knock Alabama. I think it's good. It's healthier for college football to have Alabama not win every year.
Absolutely. So, you know, you heard me talking about some of this stuff, some of the other earlier stuff. I don't know how – I know you're not much in – you've never been in labor law that I know of, but can you believe what IKEA is going to do with – I mean, literally – to be bumping some people's pay down for either A, not being vaccinated or whatever. I mean, is that even feasible? Could that even happen in the United States, do you think?
I don't know. I haven't read too much about this, so I'm just kind of first hearing this on your show. But, is it just straight out that they're saying if you're not vaccinated, you're going to get a They're not going to fire you, but they're just going to cut your pay.
Yeah, but they're going to drop you to the minimum sick pay, which I assume, I mean, it's 93 pounds a week. But here's what I don't get. They said it'll be on a case-by-case basis. I would think that that's highly unkosher, even in the United Kingdom. I mean, can they really do that?
You know,
pay one employee less based on that? I mean,
people are at-will employees, which I assume they are. You know, they don't have a contract. They can cut your pay. They can fire you for any reason as long as it's not a improper reason. But as far as, like, if they're going to reduce people's pay because they didn't get a COVID vaccination. I'm not sure that that violates any law or regulation I'm aware of. I would say this though, from a business standpoint, in a world in which retail stores like IKEA are having trouble filling their ranks, it doesn't seem to me to be a smart move. And if they really don't want people that are vaccinated working for them, then they should just get rid of them. I don't quite understand this, but maybe they think that if they just get rid of people, but I think that a lot of companies have been saying, look, you get a vaccination or you're out. So I don't think there's any legal barrier to that, but I find that very interesting though. And I think a lot of people quit and go somewhere else if they do that.
Yeah. I mean, you and I are both vaccinated and boost. I assume you're boosted. Maybe not. I am, but
I am. No, I'm boosted too.
And I'm wondering now, with more stuff that I read, I'm wondering just how safe it is and what could be the potential issues down the road. But by the same token, I mean, I don't even get it with the, I mean, look, pro-vaxxers that are just, just close-minded and wear masks, get vaxxed all the time, I don't get that. But I also don't get people that are so anti-vax. I mean, you even have people who are anti-vax with their kids for regular vaccines. You know what I mean? And I get it in this case where we're talking, a vaccine that's been developed pretty quickly. But by the same token, if it's there, and I mean, I guess the other problem is that they haven't done enough as far as treatments, as far as developing treatments and really making it public what you should and can do. So I just don't get that. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You were starting
to say
something.
No, that's fine.
So here's the one that I really wanted. What do you read Thomas Friedman at all? I mean, I assume not by choice, but.
I mean, I've read him some. I'm not a devotee of his or anything like that.
But what do you think of his suggestion of putting Liz Cheney on the Biden on the ticket with Biden in 2024?
Well, I did hear this, I don't know whether it's a sort of a liberal wet dream or at least among some liberals, but I would remind anybody like him or any liberal or any Democrat that thinks this is a good idea to look at her voting record, because other than the fact that she's got something against Trump, she's pretty conservative. So
yeah.
I don't see how that would work. I mean, is she going to become a Democrat and change all of her views? But I mean, I would remind people that before Trump came along, was there any Republican more hated than her dad by Democrats
exactly.
and liberals?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that this Trump derangement stuff is really causing all that, which is what this is motivated by. There's this
sure.
deathly fear that he's going to come back, which I think he will. And, there's recent polling out now. The Rasmussen poll has a pretty hefty lead over Biden. So they're panicking.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Sure they are. I mean, as evidenced by the fact that there are still Democrats that are trying to make it so that he can never run for federal office again. I mean,
right, because they don't trust the people to vote the right way if he runs.
I mean, on what basis would they even? I mean, I don't even know what basis, because I've read, I see those headlines and I don't even read them. You know what I mean? I mean, I just don't see the point.
It's a joke. You may have heard this, is that the basis for denying him or a lot of Republicans, they're talking about trying to do this with members of Congress. And by the way, this won't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Is there's a provision in, I think, the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, doing this off the top of my head, that
yeah.
basically says that it was, which these were civil, just, Reconstruction right after the Civil War amendments.
Right.
Right after the Civil War ended, just as a quick backdrop, a couple Confederates, including the vice president of the Confederacy, tried to show up and take their old seats in Congress, which they'd relinquished when their state seceded and they joined the Confederacy.
Right.
So when the 14th Amendment was passed, they put a provision in there that said people that had actively engaged in rebellion, talking about, people that had been, literally rebelled
at war,
and engaged in insurrection and became officials in the provisional government of the Confederacy. these people were not just, you know, can't just, you know, they were barred basically from serving in Congress.
Sure.
Now, the Congress had that amendment gives them the Congress the ability to allow these people back in. Eventually, most former Confederates were, but it took many years. But anyway, to try to stretch that and argue that Trump was, or any other Republican, say, that wants to run for re-election in Congress, somehow was because they either objected at the electoral count to the various states' electoral votes being counted, I'm not aware of any congressman or Trump either directly encouraging or participating in what happened on January 6th. But to try to stretch that into these people are engaged in rebellion and insurrection, and therefore under the 14th Amendment should be barred from running for office. First of all, I don't know what the mechanism would be. Are they going to go file a lawsuit and get they get laughed out of federal court? I will tell you if that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, this is it's ridiculous. It's on its face ridiculous. And you know, this again goes back to this Trump derangement syndrome. They're so desperate that they know. There's probably a pretty good chance right now, if you're putting money on it, as to who's going to be the next president after the 2024 election. He's probably a pretty good pick, you know, and they know it, and they know they're in trouble with the current occupant of the White House. And if you look at who the replacements might be, you know, Hillary's being banded about. We could only be so lucky. I hope that they nominate her. But, I mean, they're in trouble. And it's causing sort of desperation, and that's why you're hearing this kind of stuff. It's amazing. It's also why they're trying to get rid of the filibuster to push through this federal voting rights bill that would basically take the states out of the picture and try to have the federal government, i.e. Democrats, dictating how elections should be run across the entire nation. It's not going to happen again, but that's what they want to do. This is about Democrats trying to rig the system to ensure that they don't lose elections.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask.
It's anti-democratic beyond belief.
That was what I was going to ask you next. Was about that whole filibuster thing. Is there a chance that goes anywhere? Do you think or not?
No, I don't think so. I think pretty much Manchin and Sinema. And remember, and they say there's probably a couple that have kind of been going floating under the radar, not wanting to say anything, letting these two take the heat.
Yep.
Don't support the change, and they're not going to support the change. I don't know why Schumer's doing this. Maybe he thinks he scores points with the base. Same thing with Biden, who gave, by the way, I don't know if you saw that speech he gave yesterday. It was a disgusting display of complete over-the-top demagoguery. I don't know how else to put it. You know, anybody that doesn't agree with him, anybody who's a Republican, anybody who voted for Trump is automatically a racist because they don't support. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And it all gets back to desperation, I think. They don't want the American people to have free choices in elections because they'll lose, especially what's coming up in November. They know what's coming up in November. And I think they have a pretty good idea what's going to come up in 2024 as long as the current occupants of the White House stay in power. And I don't see, even if they're pushed out, what Democrats going to do much better.
Yeah. You know, T-Bodie, you get these texts. So there's a bill in Seattle to put the unvaccinated in camps. Now, I didn't think – I thought that was going to – that's actually gotten to be a bill. Now, I don't know if that's statewide or if that's just in Seattle, but really – I mean,
do you know how many people we would be talking about if they tried to do that?
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, that's – you're talking just Seattle. So it would almost be the reverse. You'd almost be setting up this million-dollar camp for six people.
This is like 1984 stuff, you know. I mean, Brave New World stuff. I you know, if you remember reading all these books, from back in our college days. I mean, it's just crazy. I don't know what's happened to the Democratic Party, but the mainstream of that organization has gone dove in, you know, they've been taken over by wokeness, at least the all the activism, and they've just gone off the edge.
And people like Manchin and Sinema are considered dinosaurs by these people.
Yeah. And some of the things that they're trying to, you know, some of the ways they're trying to shame Manchin is by saying that he's actually hurting the coal mining industry by you know, not supporting Build Back Bigger. But the funny part is, I know, I mean, that's insanity for them to believe that. But the other thing that I mentioned about Schumer, one speculation is that AOC is going to run for his seat. And that she would vote against him in the primary.
And that's what's motivating him. Yeah, that's what's motivating him to go the big woke direction, too. So even though he knows it's not going to work, she can't attack him from the left. But, you know, when is anybody in the Democratic Party who has any even a tiny flake of sanity going to stand up to these people?
Well,
they don't represent more than a fringe group of the population as a whole, and yet the Democrats are captured by them.
Yeah. Well, but think about this. You know, I we always say, you know, Biden's not running the show, and people speculate that it's Obama or that it's, you know, think about it.
Ron Klain.
Why they're talking about. You know, well, I'm sorry.
Ron Klain or name? Susan Rice. You know, people operatives in the White House.
Yeah, or Soros or whoever, that they're the ones pulling the strings. But I mean, the scary part about that is literally. And this is why I don't necessarily buy the whole. I mean, I think Thomas Friedman's thing. I think he's just literally just spitting out whatever he can, because I don't think he realizes if as I suspect, Obama is still working behind the scenes, and there's not a single chance in hell that Kamala Harris is going to be left off the ticket unless Michelle wants on the ticket, which, you know, that's not out of the realm of possibility, maybe. But then I could see it. Then I could see them pushing her aside. But I mean,
right. No, I think you're right about that.
I mean, there's a bigger chance you're going to see Michelle Obama or Hillary on the ticket, 50 times greater chance than you would ever see Liz Cheney on the ticket. I mean, you know, as you said, she may suffer from Trump derangement syndrome as well. But I mean, she is you're right. Her voting record, she is a pretty conservative, and her father definitely is. You know.
Well, I mean, look, and also as a more practical reason here, like, and this is where these people are living in the clouds, or they got their heads in the, up there, well, whatever. But if they did this, if they put her on the ticket as vice president to run, I guess what, with Biden in 2024 is what
yeah.
It wouldn't help. It wouldn't make any, it probably would alienate some of their base, and it certainly wouldn't, you know, there aren't people, you know, I was going to vote for Trump. But Biden just put Liz Cheney on the ticket, so I'm going to switch over now. I mean, come on.
If you're going to vote for Trump, Liz Cheney is not exactly – yeah, exactly. That's about the last person that would – because other than you know, for every fringe Democrat, there are fringe Republicans that go along with Liz Cheney, but there aren't that many. I mean, they make it sound like the Never-Trumpers are running the Republican Party.
Well, you know, that's your point. The Never Trumpers, they're not voting for Trump anyway.
Right.
But
exactly.
I mean, the people that would be inclined to vote for Trump with, if it was Trump v. Biden, but they're really on the fence, and then Liz Cheney gets put on the table. I just don't think that's gonna more than a handful.
And again, Dick Cheney, can you see Dick Cheney going on a campaign stop to anywhere? And not getting laughed out by the left. I mean, in spite of the fact that he's actually smarter than
incarnate to the Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, he's still living down a hunting accident from 2000.
He was Darth Vader. You know,
yeah.
This guy was Darth
yeah.
Vader when they were Bush was in office.
Yeah,
it just shows you this Trump derangement syndrome. It goes, you never know what turn it's going to take.
Yeah, you don't. So do you know, by the way, Mike Lang that passed away, you know what the Altamont Free Concert is or was?
Is that the one where the Rolling Stones were –
Exactly.
They hired the Hells Angels for security, and they killed a couple people.
Yeah. They killed
Jagger
one.
Said it's one of the great regrets in his career.
Yeah, they killed one for sure.
1969, something like that.
Yeah, it was 1969, and it was – the Stones did not play Woodstock, and they were coming under some heat from people for they on their tour. They were bad mouthing Woodstock at times, not overtly, but you know, making little references. And then, of course, they were trying to promote their album, Sticky Fingers, which came out in 1971. In fact, you know, I think it was one of the last concerts that Mick Taylor played with them, who was the guy that was brought in to replace Brian Jones. But so Mike Lang was brought in. Mike Lang was brought in because, one, they moved to the venue. The original venue was one of the other speedways, and that person, the owner of that speedway, pulled out, and Melvin Belli was their attorney for the Stones. And I know, it's almost like it's
I always think
like
of that guy as Gorgon from that Star Trek episode.
That's what it's like. I mean, yeah. So he was brought.
He brainwashed all those kids to take over the Enterprise.
Yeah. And that's what he if you've seen the movie, or if you haven't seen it, see it again if you've seen it. But if you haven't, definitely see it. It's usually like on Turner Classic Movies, like on their on-demand section. And so anyway, he brings in they move it to the Altamont Speedway, and they bring in Mike Lang because they had sort of forgotten that they actually had to have setups for this. And he was one of the people. And again, you don't see this on the movie because they're trying to, you know, put the Stones in somewhat of a sympathetic light, but he was the one that said, you know, he looked at the stage setup, and at the previous place they had, you know, the stage was elevated. T. Bodie would understand this. The stage was elevated and it wasn't really accessible to the crowd. Whereas at Altamont Speedway, they were accessible both from behind, although they eventually fixed that, but they were so accessible from the front. And so they hired the Hell's Angels to, you know, and they, you know, now Hell's Angels later claimed we weren't brought in as head beaters. We were just supposed to sit there and block people. Well, they did it. You know, they did a lot more than that. And they, you know, they were paid in beer, which that's not going to go well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So they're all, you know, they're carrying weapons and they're you know, drunk as skunks, basically. And,
yeah,
and you know, they're already inclined to want to beat somebody up if they look at them the wrong way.
And a guy kicking over a bike wasn't a very smart move either. But, yeah, so Mike Lang, although he was brought in, he was brought in late as a consultant, sort of, but he was one of the ones that said, this isn't going to go well. I mean, this is, you know, he saw the setup, he looked at it, and he just said, This is doomed to failure. And of course he was right. I mean, you know, four people died, I think. One was killed at the hands of the Hell's Angels. I think another one in a drug induced, if you read it, I think it said like in a drug induced state, drowned in a little, like in a little pond right there, drowned in there. I mean, you know, it just,
jeez.
Yeah, it was not a good, but yeah, that was the ultimate,
you know,
free
thing,
concert.
The thing that I'm wondering about is like, as a sort of a lawyer part of me is like, there must have been some liability to the Stones for that. If that happened now, anything like that, the Rolling Stones would be sued. I mean, they'd be sued out of existence, I think.
Well, yeah.
What's the recent thing in Texas?
Yeah. What's that recent concert in Texas? I forget the guy's name. It's not Travis Barker. I forgot the guy's name, but just had that concert where, you know, like 12 people or more got killed, and it was
that's gonna be something else. My question was, because you mentioned Hank earlier, you mentioned Woodstock, and of course I asked whatever happened to Wavy Gravy, because I always think of that the documentary movie on Woodstock. Standing up and goes, hey man, the Van Heusen Expressway is backed up for 2 hours.
No, like, that was Arlo Guthrie. Wavy Gravy he was the one that was talking about, you know, feeding people there, and you know, he wasn't the guy that got people out to do yoga breathing and all that stuff, but he was one of the, you know, he was getting people to be in harmony and all that. I mean, that was part of what his shtick was. But yeah, so four people died.
Maybe
one
I got
killed.
It wrong. I have to go back and look at
the other one. Yeah, the other three. There was the Meredith Hunter was the guy that got stabbed by the Hell's Angels, and then there was a guy who was hit and run car accident. Another one was a drowning, an LSD induced drowning is how they put it. But the other guy I'm thinking of is Travis Scott. And that was that Astroworld Music Festival in Houston, and 8 people died in that one. So yeah, they passed the Stones. So, but yeah, if you look it up, you can go on Google and then go to Wikipedia. But yeah, they were basically doing it. The Stones basically did it because they were, sort of getting some flack and late in their tour, and so they did it as a sort of a, this is going to be a charitable thing. Santana was there, Jefferson Airplane, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, the Flying Burrito Brothers, most of the people who had been at Woodstock. Grateful Dead were scheduled but declined. And you see during the concert, they're talking about Marty Balin.
Was Blind Faith there by any chance? Yeah.
No, they were gone by then. That album came out in 69, but they were already done by then. What happened, Grateful Dead, you see in the concert, Marty Balin, one of the lead singers for Jefferson Airplane, gets knocked out by a Hell's Angel. So while they're arguing that on stage, Jerry Garcia was in background, was in the back, and he was like, and he says, Hell's Angels are beating people. So the Dead just left. They said, no way, we're not staying for this. And they were one of the prime movers of it. And they said, nope, we're out of here. So yeah, when the Dead refuses to play live, something's going on. So, so that was the ultimate freak. But Mike Lang was not the mover of it. He was brought in, like I said, late as a consultant. So yeah, but yeah, it's hard to believe because he was 77. But if you see pictures of him, he didn't look like he aged much. But I guess non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is kind of the.
I knew somebody who had that, or he used to work at federal court. Another person worked there, and yeah. that's pretty brutal stuff. Especially if you get the. There's one that can be a little more dormant, but then there's one that if you get it, it's pretty virulent.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming maybe that's what he had. And it's very deadly.
So, but yeah, And what was the song I mentioned? You Don't Bring Me Flowers. Was that in The Jazz Singer? I don't remember.
Yeah, it might have been because I am thinking now. Well, then there's that famous duet with Neil Diamond and Barbara Streisand, I think.
Well, that's that one.
That song.
I think it's that one, but
yeah.
So Marilyn Bergman. She didn't write all of them herself. I think she was a co-writer, but that's a big loss.
So, Hank, while I got you here on the line, let me ask you, because you seem to have a better memory of this place in Iowa City called
The Mill.
Somebody said, wasn't that one of your favorites? They're tearing it down. I got a message from somebody about this. And so he goes, I remember stumbling out of there a few times. I'm drawing a blank on this place.
Okay. If you went past the pedestrian mall to Burlington Street, it faced Burlington. It was not a small place. It had a pretty big dining room. And then at the end of it was a place for performers. And they didn't have it was mainly almost always acoustical acts. Like Greg Brown, like I mentioned, from Prairie Home Companion was where he sort of made his name. But he would have been the most notable. But Tony Brown, I think, played it a couple times, although he tended to play the Crow's Nest and Gabe's more. Especially if you've got more people playing with them. But, yeah, it was a
Gabe's.
It was popular.
I do have a vague memory of that place.
Yeah Gabe's was – Gabe's
did,
was –
Did we go
was,
there a few times?
We went to Gabe's and the Crow's Nest. The only time I would go to the Mill, I never went for music. I always went I remember a couple times classes on – classes that would have a happy hour together. We would go there. But they had a spaghetti special.
Lane.
Yeah, exactly. He never went
there.
And
Rowdy Malcolm Downey, remember that guy? Rowdy Malcolm Downey?
Rob Scott. Raging socialist. No, but yeah. Remember Sharon, the guy Sharon that I had for a TA that came to our party? He was the guy I went there with. Yeah, so that's
like
where the Mill was.
He befriended the Beak, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's why it was on Burlington Street, so you would have been facing backward towards the pedestrian mall and all that stuff. And I don't think, the Crow's Nest moved from its location when it got big and went on South Dubuque, but the Mill was pretty much always the same. But yeah, they had two or three nights a week, a spaghetti special.
Yeah, you know, that does sound familiar now.
Yeah, so that was
okay. And, it's been so long. You can't really, like I was telling somebody, if I had a dollar,
you know, if I could remember every bar or nightclub I'd been in the last 40 years, if I had a dollar for that, I'd be a wealthy man.
Well, if I had a dollar just for my appearances at those places, it would be I'd be doing quite well. Or as Tim Lane say, I'd be doing just fine. So, but yeah, that's
or if I had a $2 bill.
Yeah. Oh God. No. You so okay.
And this guy's here's sitting on the equivalent of the Canadian Fed. That's
yeah, exactly. And he was asking. Yeah, exactly. He was doing that. So, but yeah, the mill.
He's
that's where the mill was.
It was
on Burlington. I would say, like directly in line with the field house, but I'm probably wrong on that. I was thinking like if you drew a north-south axis. But it probably wasn't, but I always just think of it that way.
Well,
Peabody
chimed in. It was, like, behind the field house. So.
Yeah, it was behind, and not directly behind, because that was it was really, like, two blocks from the pedestrian mall
okay.
to Burlington Street. So, but, yeah, that's what, it was sort of like they had cheap spaghetti nights so college students could afford to go there and not have to cook their own, you know, type deal. And they had a couple good dark beers, I remember. I mean, I remember that pretty well, so. But
so
yeah,
turn it down again.
Yeah, I'm surprised that it lasted this long. I would have assumed that being on Burlington Street that would have gotten swallowed up years ago. Because I mean, that's a major through street in Iowa City. So and you know, it's a street that goes over the river, so to speak. So that's kind of But anyway, so what else? What else is going on politically that maybe people haven't heard about? Anything that you can think of that's really kind of. Maybe under the radar, even?
Yeah. Keep your eye out for – it's more legal, I guess, but it has political ramifications. Tomorrow, I think, the Supreme Court's going to announce their decision on the vaccine mandates.
Oh, they are announcing
and,
it tomorrow?
Yeah. They scheduled the time – you know, they had emergency briefing and then oral argument last week.
Right.
Which was unusual, which means they're probably going to do it quick. Well, I heard Monday that they had designated Thursday as a day to release opinions, which was not scheduled before. So my hunch is that they're doing it because they're going to release those opinions. And I think it's highly likely they're going to strike down that mandate. And the one in particular I'm talking about is there are two of them, is the one that applies to any employer of more than 100 people requiring vaccine mandates. Under the OSHA regulations, which was Congress did not authorize this. It's an overreach, and I think that's what the Supreme Court's going to rule. So that's going to be
what's the other one
that's tomorrow, and then we'll see how the Democrats will go crazy when that happens. What?
What's the other one? You said
the other one was on where they had confined it, I think, to just healthcare workers and federal employees, which I think probably will. They may strike that down too, but. That's got more of a chance of being upheld, but I'm pretty sure, based on the oral arguments and from what I've been reading, that the Supreme Court and the makeup of the Supreme Court, they're going to strike down that the OSHA regulations are requiring mandates, vaccine mandates on any employer with over 100 people. You know,
now,
private, it has nothing to do with federal.
Yeah. Now, here's the next question, though. If it does... Oh, now T-Bone says, if you ever got kicked out the back door of the field house and looked up, you'd see the back door of the mill. I never got kicked out of the back door of the field house, so I never traveled that route by there. So, but, okay,
I
so
don't think
say,
I ever did either, but we need to ask him about that. You know?
Yeah, exactly. He sounds a little familiar. So if the mandate gets bounced, do you think Congress would come in and do it? I don't think they would, personally. But
I think that's it because Congress, you know, has had, the ability to do it because they won't get Republican support. Any such bill would die in the Senate. That kind of sweeping mandate. Look, remember Biden has been saying all along this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, basically, which has turned out to be total BS because we've seen with the Omicron variant coming down that it's basically, the vaccines are not preventing people or boosters even from getting infected. What it does do is lessen the severity of the
of the symptoms for anything, you know, any variant, yeah. but particularly for Omicron. But Omicron has been shown, I think, to be kind of a, you know, it's like getting the flu or a head cold.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, the other thing, it's not
as severe.
No, but here's the other thing, and this is one of the things that's been brought up about is the Bob Saget case. You know, he had recently gotten over COVID. I don't know if he was vaccinated or boosted or anything like that. But if that's the case, are they gonna pull that one out? Let's put it this way: if he was not vaccinated, we'll find out quickly that it was a COVID thing. You know what I mean? If it was a COVID thing, we'll find that out.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a COVID angle to this.
Yeah, he got over it, but he got over it like in November or December. But the question would become, because if that was a case, they're going to push like hell to get that out in the, you know, like this would be the new exhibit number one as to why you have to get vaccinated. But
my understanding is that he died suddenly in his sleep, which doesn't seem like it would be a, you know. Yeah,
well, unless it was a blood.
I'm thinking it's probably a heart attack or stroke or something.
Yeah, but if it's a blood clot, you know, as an example, that from, you know, now don't forget, both sides will try and play it, because the anti-vax crowd will say, see, the vaccine caused it or whatever. So I mean, it's not going to be, you know, but it's just, here's the thing
you just lurched into a really big deal. How many of these hospitalizations and deaths that are marked as a result of COVID were incidental? In other words, these people had other problems, and that's why they're in the hospital. And then when they're in the hospital, they got tested and they found out they had COVID. That's not why they went. The same thing with deaths. I think I mentioned before that they were counting if you got killed in a car accident, they did an autopsy on you, and the test came back showing that you were a positive for COVID. They would mark that as a COVID death.
Yep.
It's totally ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
You know, these numbers are, you know.
What will be interesting to see, though, if the mandate is indeed struck down, what will be interesting to see is which companies will still move forward and say, but we're going with a mandatory vaccination anyway. You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
That's a different animal than you know, an OSHA mandate. So that's, you know, that's what will be interesting.
Right.
I mean. And here's the other thing. This is more a political question than a legal question, but you're obviously, you know, very up politically. What is the deal? I mean, they literally went from the Senate filibuster on, you know, making it about Built Back Bigger, and then moved the, you know, the goalposts or whatever. But I mean, are they really reaching at straws, or is this cogent strategy even? It just doesn't, I don't know. None of it makes sense to me. Does any of it make sense to you?
They desperately want to pass this voting rights stuff. Yeah. It's just that the votes aren't there, and it's not. They aren't going to. They're not going to. You know. Deliver a wrecking ball to the filibuster. It's not. But it's political posturing, I think, and desperation, kind of a combination of both. But what we're seeing is the true Democratic Party the way it is right now. And these people are out there in left field so far, they can't even see the ballpark.
Yeah, I guess. Everything they do makes less and less sense to me. You know, it seemed to me, if what happened on just January 6th of 2021 is like a lot of us think, in other words, they play, you know, not hiring the National Guard, not having extra police, then it would seem to me that it's pretty obvious they knew something was going to happen, and that was planned that way, you know? I mean, so there was planning. But I don't get the swerve.
Right, and that committee will not look into that aspect of things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know. Now, what do you think of the other side? I don't remember if it was McCarthy. I think it was Kevin McCarthy, not Jim Jordan, but said if the Democrat, you know, he said sort of like when the Republicans take back the House, that he's going to fire people from committees like Swalwell and some of the others that are on committees and are acting, you know. I'm trying to remember exactly who it was. It wasn't it was Swalwell and some others.
Ilhan Omar.
Oh, that's right.
Omar and Schiff.
Schiff, okay. So what was, I mean, I get Schiff. I mean, it's why he would be pulled from the...
Hey, you know, who started the precedent, right? That's all I would say. And what's good goose, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know if
as they often do, Democrats have brought, if that happens, and I think it will if they take the House back, and I think they will take the House back,
they're going to find out that that's another thing that they did that they regretted.
Yeah.
Opening up that Pandora's box.
Hopefully. I mean, the filibuster, I just can't imagine that there's a single – I mean, here's the other thing that I don't get by it. They're, you know, they're saying, you know, the minority should never have – well, technically speaking, the Democrats don't have a majority. It's an even split. Now, they're counting the vice president, but, you know, on strict lines, it's not a majority. You know, that's – I mean, they're playing it that way, but – you know, another thing though.
They're just relying on the tiebreak.
Yeah. So I mean, if they can't get to that point, that's not even.
Well, yeah, and that's another larger point you're making, that there's no mandate for this, and it's not anything that they campaigned on or anything like that. You know, Biden was going to be the unifier, and just, you know, it's going to be the voice of sanity, return things to normal. Right? What a joke! What a fraud! What a bait and switch they pulled on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Course, you know, these people that voted for him, they should have, you know, I mean, it just shows you that some people aren't paying attention, but, you know, I'm a little bit surprised at how far left they lurched. I guess I shouldn't have been.
Oh, Bringing It Boy is in the chat room, and his avatar is the Rolling Stones thing. The Rolling Stones, logo. Boy, man, I wish you'd have been here earlier when we were talking about the Stones, the Altamont Free Concert, because it was the one of the movers behind it. So sorry you got here late. Otherwise, you'd have heard it. So he makes a good point, though. He or she makes a good point. Depends on the quota, what the hospital needs to make in order to get their money. That's how they're determining how they classify these cases. As you pointed out,
they do. They were getting paid for that for every COVID, you know, statistic or whatever, you know. So
I assume
that these are inflated numbers, though. I think.
Well, those numbers are inflated, and that's why I said the inflation numbers are not real. You're going to tell me that with gas prices going up over 50%, that inflation is only 7%? Annualized, there's just no way. I mean, that would have to mean that, and I don't know the components of inflation.
No, not annualized. It went up 7% in December.
Oh, I thought that was annualized. So that was just 7%.
Now, you know,
okay.
I wouldn't extrapolate that into the year yet because you have to see how the next couple months are going. But that was a huge bump up in just December. And, you know, combined with the, you know, this is being combined with the supply chain crisis where there's not enough stuff there.
Yep.
And,
exactly.
You know, that just fuels the inflation.
Now, are you seeing the supply chain stuff where you are? Are you seeing empty store shelves all over the place or not? Are you really?
Well, I was just in the store yesterday, and it was very interesting. I was buying some meat, and there was plenty of beef, you know, the beef display in the meat section. But where they have all the chicken at, the chicken breast, there was one package, which I quickly took, but it was all empty. And you do see it's kind of piecemeal right now. You'll see some stuff, you know, you go down various rows. This is up here in the Denver area, and there's you know, there's stuff, you know, missing.
You're right. Come to think of it, you're right. I have seen chicken shortages at Sam's Club. I mean, Sam's has a limit on items and stuff like that on chicken. So I have seen that. But beef, I mean, you're not going to see beef shortages. I mean, you might eventually, but as expensive as it is, they're going to churn it out as fast as they can, I would think. But chicken,
exactly.
But chicken wings, I mean, literally chicken wings, I've seen them at $4.99 a pound for chicken wings. I mean, I literally remember when chicken wings were
through the roof.
Oh, is it really? See, we haven't bought real pork bacon in a long time because this is where my Scottish blood comes out. I get turkey bacon
it's hard to give that up.
Yeah. Oh, no, see, I get turkey bacon because it doesn't shrink. No, it doesn't shrink as much. Turkey bacon doesn't shrink the way pork bacon does. So.
Right. Because it's a lot leaner. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah. That's why. So bring your boy.
Buffalo Wild Wings is probably really hurting. I haven't been in one for a while, but it's interesting to see what their prices are looking like right now.
Well, the place where we go to watch Hawks games, We were there for the Minnesota game, and on the menu for chicken wings, it literally said market price. And when I saw that, that was when I was just
with lobster now.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally in the same classification as lobster. I mean, that was where we – now, bringing a boy, he says he believes $20,000 for each COVID case to hospitals. I'm not sure if that's per
okay.
You know, if that's per case or whatever. But, I mean, yeah, it's obviously, you know. You know, here's – when we went and got our boosters, you know, when I got my Johnson & Johnson, so I only got the one shot for Johnson & Johnson, but they didn't ask anything about insurance. But when we went to get our boosters, they did. They did ask for our insurance cards and insurance information, and you know, my wife checked, and they said no, it's free. It doesn't cost. I'm wondering if insurance companies are going to get billed for that somehow, and we're just going to absorb it in our premiums next year, so to speak. So that's, I mean, did you have to show for your booster or for either of your shots? Did you have to show medical insurance information or not?
I don't think so. I think when I filled out a card initially, there might have been a question in there, and I filled out my insurance information for that reason. But my insurance was never charged. I mean, no one's supposed to be being charged for these,
right?
So,
and that would also explain our deficits and our, you know, I mean, it's just they're not gonna.
Well, exactly.
Oh, bring a boy also asked, dairy products are scarce. He's right. He says, is it because we import from China? Well, we didn't used to. I mean, we used to have, you know, big dairy production here, but one of the largest producers, Dean Foods, filed bankruptcy a couple of years ago, 2 years ago or so, or maybe 3 years ago. But I haven't, you know, I don't do much in the way, you know, the only thing we really get is like coffee creamer and stuff. So that's, you know, like half and half and stuff. So I haven't seen the dairy, you know, that's one I wouldn't see.
I haven't noticed that as much yet.
I noticed now. I do know that prices are higher. What we used to pay, like, again, like gas, when we used to pay $1.80 or $1.90 for a gallon of skim milk, I've noticed that skim milk is like, you know, almost double in price from what it was when we used to buy milk regularly. So, yeah, I guess we're going to.
Well,
we're going to see how
this
goes.
Like prices in restaurants too. I mean, I don't know if you've been out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I like to go to the occasional steak place, and I am still going to have my steak, but it hasn't gotten cheaper. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. No. Exactly. It hasn't. I mean, where we still occasionally get chicken wings, we'll get a box of 20 wings. It used to be like, from what I understand, like $10.99, and it's now, you know, $14.99. So, you know, that's a pretty big bump.
Market, you know, price, though. That's
yeah, that's what we saw. We literally saw that on a restaurant menu, our sports bar menu, market price. Oh, bringing boys says they crushed the $5
mark. Like, you know, lobster.
Yeah, lobster or you know, crab legs or something. Bringing a boy just pointed out they just crushed, and he and she are in California, and they just hit $5 for a gallon of gas. Now, see, when gas hits $5 for me, I really will consider hoofing it or getting me a scooter, you know, like one of those little push scooters or something, because $5 a gallon for gas is, I mean, I don't even think I've ever paid $4 a gallon for gas.
Well, you know, the thing is that I think this is an intentional policy by these loons in the White House, in the Democratic Party. They don't like the idea of fossil fuels. They don't like the oil and gas industry. They don't want people driving around in cars and things like that. So I think there's they won't admit it because it's not politically popular.
Yeah.
But I think that they've intended to drive up the price of gas. That's why they've shut down, you know, all the production. They shut down the Keystone pipelines. They've taken us off being energy independent because they don't want cheap gas. Because that goes against their you know, new green purpose.
Well, remember what Saki said at one point when they were pushing against, you know, when the media was really pushing her on it. She says, well, doesn't this tell you why you should own an electric car? As somebody pointed out, though, the average electric car,
exactly,
the difference between the cost for, you know, internal combustion and electric is like the difference between last year's gas prices versus this year's gas prices. I mean, it's you know, it's appreciably more expensive. Now, the long-term ownership cost is probably
not. They don't care, Hank. Yeah. They don't care. They've got their agenda, and that's all that matters.
Yeah,
you know, they don't care. That's the big joke out there, is that they don't care about the little guy. They don't care about the you know, mom and pop out there struggling to make a living.
They'll talk a good game, but when it comes to their ideology, that's what matters.
Yeah. So last thing, where do you think the Hawks stand for tomorrow night against Indiana?
It's a big game. They need to win it. I'm going with the Hawks, that game in Wisconsin was tough. I didn't really expect them to win up there. They got to protect the home court. They got to beat Indiana.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's the game like the Maryland game. Like the Maryland game, this game's at home. But the Maryland game, I mean, the Wisconsins and the Michigan States and Purdue's, you kind of expect to lose those, you know? I mean, you have to go. It's the toss-up games that they got to win, you know? I mean,
you're going to lose some games on the road.
Yeah, they can't do something stupid like lose to Nebraska, you know, or Northwestern. You know, that's the thing. I mean, they can't.
Right.
They've got to. But yeah, so tomorrow night's a huge game. I don't know what to think. I haven't seen any of Indiana, so I don't know how good they are. But you know, it's just going to be.
They're decent. They're not great, but they're decent. And you know, Iowa needs to come out and play well, or they could get beat.
Yeah, definitely. So
got that
anyway,
Trace,
hey,
what's his name? Trace Jackson, something or other.
Yeah,
he's pretty good.
No, they've got, and they're always tough for us anyway. So anyway, well, I'm going to close on that. I'm going to do what we close
okay.
out. So, but thanks for calling in, and I appreciate your insights, especially on some of the mandate stuff too. So, and go Hawks tomorrow night.
Okay.
So we will talk to you
go
later.
Go Hawks, and great talking to you, Hank.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So that was Hawkeye Mike, as always, insightful, and he has a lot of political and legal knowledge as a former attorney. Having worked in the federal prosecutors, but boy, he just pointed out another thing. Ford is putting a clause on. He thinks it was the F. He or she thinks it was the F-150. And the reason I say he or she, boy and wife have logins that they share, sort of, so to speak, sometimes. So I've talked with both, and I never know which one. But anyway, boy just pointed out Ford is putting a clause on the F-150. You can't sell it for a year. Think about that. Now, as a practical matter, most people don't do that. But think about that. Did they put a clause in there that you can't sell your car for a year? That's just bizarre. That's beyond bizarre. So anyway, folks, thanks for being here. We're getting back into a normal show schedule, et cetera. We're finally fully in the new year. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening to all our shows on Global Patriot Radio. In the meantime, have a good weekend. Stay safe. Don't let criminals win. Don't let lefties win. And have a good weekend. And for Hawkeye fans, of course, go Hawkeyes. We will talk to you all next week, same time, 5:30 Eastern. Have a good one, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Good night, folks.